You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is Coach Herm at ASU. It's time to watch college football live right now.
Tunnel with the game of the week. Top-ranked Clemson travels to South Bend to take on the fourth-ranked Fighting Irish in game two without Trevor Lawrence. Due to the pandemic, remember, it's a conference matchup, Notre Dame competing in the ACC. Here's Clemson head coach Dabo Swinney on facing the Fighting Irish.
Just a complete team in every facet. But again, that's what you would expect when you see a team that's ranked fourth in the country. And it's going to be awesome. It's going to be exciting matchup. Look, I've never been to Notre Dame, so this is, just from a college football standpoint, something that I have always wanted to do. I've never competed against Notre Dame until 2015. But Notre Dame, their tradition is just unbelievable and such a historic program and brand.
How prepared do you feel your team is for those moments where maybe the ball doesn't bounce your way or when – one of the top ranked teams in the country inevitably makes a few big plays?
Yeah, I mean, we're 29-3, over the last 32 games. I think, we're not a team that's easily overcome with the moment. We'll be just fine. We got to execute. The last time that we played poorly, we've won 12 in a row. You got to execute. You got to play well in the moment. But this team has exhibited that they're not a team that's going to back away from a challenge.
We're off and running on College Football Live. I'm Wendy Nix with Todd McShay and Tom Luganville. And we'll start right there. Tom, who's under more pressure, Clemson or Notre Dame?
Well, I think naturally you kind of have to say Notre Dame, right? Because all of the onlookers are going to say, well, you're playing Clemson at home. You got them with a backup quarterback. They've made some errors in the back end defensively, have given up some explosive plays. This is your opportunity. But to Brian Kelly's point, this isn't a team that's going to come out of the locker room and crawl under the turf just because they're playing Clemson. Now, can they beat Clemson? I don't know. But I think this from onlookers and outsiders looking in, the pressure is more on Notre Dame.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And simply because Clemson will be able to bounce back knowing that they have a backup quarterback in there. If they lose this game and they come back with Trevor Lawrence when he's back from the COVID protocol and play great down the stretch and don't lose another game, they have a much better chance of getting into the playoff at the end of the year. I think the more interesting part is what Notre Dame does to overcome its only real weakness. And I had them live 2 weeks ago against Pitt, and they played great. But it's very obvious studying them on tape, they don't have a vertical game. They don't have speed on the perimeter in the passing game. Ian Book is a competitive, tough running quarterback and a guy who can make some big throws. They run the ball well. They have very good defense. They play good on special teams. But the lack of that vertical passing game is going to open up things for Brent Venables, the defensive coordinator for Clemson, in terms of bringing safeties down, cheating against the run a little bit, and being able to spy book and limit some of that quarterback run aspect that has been so important in their game. So how they overcome that is going to be really interesting to watch, because that of either of these two teams, that is the one weakness that's glaring when you study the tape.
Todd, I totally agree with you. There's just not that mismatch problem for Clemson on defense with Notre Dame's skill on the outside. But maybe furthermore, how good is Notre Dame? Look at their schedule. Look at the teams that they've beat. In six games, there's a combined 12 victories amongst the six teams that they've beaten. I think this weekend for Notre Dame is going to be so revealing, because I've always felt, whether it's Clemson, whether it's Alabama, if maybe you're not on equal footing personnel-wise, you have to play out of your mind, and Clemson's going to have to do something to help you. And last week, Boston College played out of their mind, and Clemson helped them, and Boston College still couldn't beat them. So this is going to be real interesting from a barometer standpoint where Notre Dame is against Clemson.
Clemson helped Boston College a whole lot more in that first half until the defense decided to show up after the break. Of course, it's the second straight game without Trevor Lawrence, and also impacted by Lawrence and his positive COVID test is the Heisman race. So take a look. According to Caesars' William Hill, Lawrence was the odds-on favorite prior to testing positive for COVID-19. Now he has the third shortest odds behind Alabama's Mac Jones and Ohio State's Justin Fields. Here's David Pollack this morning on Get Up comparing Fields and Lawrence as pro prospects.
Are you telling me that if you were making the pick, you would consider taking Fields ahead of Lawrence as right now?
Yeah, I would start considering that now from what I'm seeing so far. And again, we're only two games in for Ohio State, but he's definitely on track to me to making this decision a lot more difficult than we thought it would be before the season.
Todd, you heard David Pollack. How would you assess the pro prospects of Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence?
It's not too far off, Wendy. You know, I just finished up my top 32, the first update we've done on the draft prospects this year based on, you know, coming from the preseason. And I have Trevor Lawrence still at number one, but I moved Justin Fields up from five to number two. And it's a shorter gap than you would think right now. And again, it's only two games, like Pollack said. But what we've seen, 87%, no interceptions. And Nebraska was cute, but Penn State, that's a good defense. They recruit well. They're talented on that side of the ball. And to come out and play as efficiently as he has, and more importantly, just studying that tape, watching him from the first four or five games a year ago, and then the progression he made late in the year, and then seeing him come out this year, now he's setting his protections a little bit better. Now he knows what the defense is trying to do, and he's able to basically manipulate what they're trying to do and work it to his favor, and knowing where the blitzes are coming from. Those were issues that he had last year, and I thought he was a little bit narrow-focused and holding onto the ball and really focusing on that primary too long at times. And I haven't seen that in the first 2 weeks. So that tells me that Ryan Day, the head coach, who's one of the best quarterback coaches in all of college football, has worked with him as much as possible during this offseason to answer some of those questions and to improve his game. And that's why I was so excited that he didn't opt out and that it was never an issue, that he wanted to play if there was a season. And you can see exactly why. He wanted to show the world. He wanted to show college football. He wanted to show NFL scouts what he had worked on and how much he had progressed, and we're seeing it through two games.
No, Todd, you had him at 1 and 2, and when we had him coming out of high school, we had them both at 1 and 2. It was the first time in 15 years and the only time we had two quarterbacks at 1 and 2 nationally. And I agree with you. I don't think the gap between the two is...
You're always a few years ahead of me, Luganville.
I always got you by a couple. You know, when they're 15, you come and talk to me, okay? But I will say this. You know, one of the things, and you touched on it, Todd, I think that there is a noticeable difference, and this is where the gap's closed, a noticeable difference in Justin Fields' anticipation, his decisiveness. I think he's quickened up his delivery, and there seems to be a comfort level where maybe a year ago he was thought of as a really dynamic, powerful runner that was competent in the passing game. Now I think he's a true passer that happens to be a premier athlete, and that's a reversal from a year ago, and I think that's upping his NFL stock to your point, and that's the world you're living in. I just don't, everybody's making it, you know, 16 and everybody else, I don't know, and you're right, it's an early sample size, but it's about as good as you're possibly going to play at any position at any time is what Justin Fields has done the last 2 weeks.
The other thing we should note, too, the name that was at the top of that in terms of the Heisman is Mac Jones from Alabama, and I've had him three times this year. And he gets better every time I've seen him. You know, he threw those two pick sixes against Auburn last year in the big start in the rivalry game and was able to bounce back from it in that game and had him a field goal away from tying it up at the end. And he played great against Michigan. He comes out this year, he's been red hot, and he's one of those players where I'm now starting to talk to NFL scouts who are doing their evaluations too, and I've seen just enough that is moving up rapidly. I don't know that it's going to be Joe Burrow at the end of the day. We already have Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields, but Mac Jones has moved up. And Zach Wilson from BYU, no one ever gets to watch on TV, even though he's on just about every week. seems like he's getting no attention, but he's been phenomenal as well. So we, when it's all said and done, might have five quarterbacks in this class that wind up being first-round draft picks.
And we've talked about this quarterback class with the anticipation of those guys turning pro, Todd, I feel like for years, and finally we're getting closer. All right, we've got one Power 5 conference left to join the party, and finally it will happen. The Pac-12 kicks off at 9 a.m. local when Arizona State travels to number 20 USC. Not a bad way to get things started. The other notable game between Stanford and 12th-ranked Oregon. You can catch that game at 7:30 Eastern on ABC. We'll go through a little primer of sorts. We did this when the Big Ten started to play, Todd. Look at some of these players in the Pac-12 that you need to be watching that will be on our radar, and we'll start with you and a USC quarterback.
Yeah, Keaton Slovis, he's a talent. I actually called his first game against Stanford when he came in as a starter when JT Daniels went down, and I thought it actually was an upgrade, and I was surprised because JT Daniels is so hyped coming out of high school and played well when he was healthy. Now, Slovis, it's the same deal, staying on the field, staying healthy, but he can make all of the throws, and he is really impressive in terms of his anticipation throwing the ball down the field.
Well, Todd, I'm with you. I'm going to go on the other side of that matchup with Jaden Daniels. I think these are two, not only the best quarterbacks in the league, but two of the best offensive players in the league. And one of the things about Jaden is he doesn't turn the ball over. He can make plays with his arm, makes plays with his legs. I think ASU's got a chance in that opener.
And if we're going offensive skill position players that aren't quarterbacks, I'm going to go to Utah with the tight end Brant Keithy, who I saw against Colorado last year with Steve Levy and Brian Greasy, and we were blown away with what he did. Three touchdowns in that game. He is, I would argue, outside of Kyle Pitts in Florida, the most athletic tight end in the country, what he can do after the catch and getting vertical. You got to keep an eye on this guy making improvement this year.
Amon-Ra St. Brown at SC is my guy. I think he needs to have a breakout year. He's been productive, don't get me wrong. I don't think he's been anywhere near the type of playmaker in all phases of the game, either out of the slot or on the outside downfield, as we expected him to be. He needs to be that guy this year for Keaton Slovis.
And then finally, Elijah Molden, if we're going the defensive side. The Washington cornerback is, I just love watching his tape simply because of how fast his eyes work, his recognition. His dad, Alex, played in the league for 8 years. You can tell he's been around the game his whole life. Four interceptions a year ago. Washington always produces great cornerbacks and defensive backs, and he's the next guy.
How about Kayvon Thibodeau, Todd? I mean, this is a conference that is much maligned when it comes to defensive front personnel, and they finally got a guy that looks like he belongs in the SEC. He can't have a sophomore slump, but I expect him to take the next step.
Well, those are certainly the notable names to watch, but like many conferences, there was also some marquee names to opt out of the season. So here they are, according to our Todd McShay. Oregon has two players projected with first-round grades for the upcoming draft that opted out. That's Pensy Sewell and Javon Holland. Three other players with second-round grades also chose to not play this season. Speaking of the Pac-12, our old friend and colleague Herm Edwards joins us. He'll talk about what defines success for his Sun Devils in year three of his program.
I don't know what else to say except thanks. We're going to football. What a day.
Well, as we promised, Coach Herm Edwards, so here we go. He took over Arizona State in 2018. The Sun Devils have knocked off five AP-ranked opponents in that time. The only coach with more in his first two seasons in Tempe was John Cooper with six. And then last year, they led all FBS teams with three wins as an unranked team against a ranked opponent. So far, so good. But what about this year? It's been a wild couple of months for Coach Herm and the Pac-12. On August 11th, the conference postponed the football season along with the Big Ten, only to have it reinstated in September. A seven-game conference-only schedule begins this weekend with the Pac-12 championship game scheduled for December 18th. Well, we couldn't be happier to have Sun Devils coach and our former colleague, Herm Edwards, with us. Funny having you on that side of things, Coach. But listen, let me ask you this. I know there's been a range of emotions because the season was in jeopardy, the season canceled, then you're back, and now finally getting ready to start. What's that been like?
Well, you mentioned it. It was a range of emotions for us, especially in the Pac-12. We got our game plan from the medical professionals, and at one point, it looked very dark around here. But then all of a sudden, the skies have cleared some, and now we're headed to having a season. Now, it's a shortened season, as we all well know, but I think our whole conference is excited about playing football again.
Understandably so, Coach. And look, I know you watch. You see what goes on. We've seen Florida. We've seen Wisconsin now have to cancel two straight games. You know, what's that like watching that and then also communicating, staying the course with your players?
Well, the bubble is important because we don't have any wiggle room for bye games. We have six games. That's it. There's no bye. And so I think our players understand that. Our coaching staff understands that we have to make sure we protect each other and continue to stay in this bubble. And I've got to give our players and coaches a lot of credit. We've been able to do that. And so now we're a couple of days away from playing a pretty good opponent in USC on the road. So that gets your attention. But I think in any college athlete right now, your ability to adjust, socially, for the most part, we are creatures of habit. And young people have this social network that they deal with, and you have to do it on camera now rather than personal. And I think if you want to make this thing work as a student athlete, that's part of the new requirement for you, because this is all about not only protecting yourself but protecting your teammates. And if you don't do that, if this thing should break out on your team, there's going to be cancellation involved.
There is. That's just the world we're living in. Let me ask you this. Two winning seasons, 2 years at the helm. You referenced the shortened season and how different a year it is. So what defines success for your Sun Devils this time around?
Well, it's always about winning. And obviously the thing that's unique about our season this year is that we play in the South. And so we only have one opponent in the North, and that will be the Cal Bears. And so every game seems to be like March Madness, right? It's a playoff opportunity. If you win, you're still in the hunt to win the conference, and there's a shortened season. And so with that being said, all these games are magnified, whether you win or lose.
Coach, look, I know they love you out there. We miss you, but I'll ask you this. Are you known more now for the miracle at the Meadowlands or the whole you play to win the game situation?
You play to win the game. Hello, you play to win the game.
They kind of both work hand in hand, and I was in a unique situation in both those places. It's kind of ironic, though, when you think about it. The fumble was in New York, right? I mean, it was in the game against the Giants, and the you play to win the game thing was in New York too. It's kind of funny, isn't it? How does this thing? And I was born in Fort Myers, New Jersey. Wow.
Listen, Coach, what a long, strange trip it has been. But we're just happy we get to watch continuously. So best of luck this weekend. I know it won't be easy, but we're happy to have Pac-12 football back.
Thank you. And tell all the folks back there I said hello, please.
Always, Coach. We miss you. Up next, an SEC showdown with major playoff implications. Tom on the deciding factor between Georgia and Florida and the matchup of top eight teams.
Maxion is back. Maxion is back.
Ready?
We are. Ready.
Wednesday night, Maxion.
Nothing better.
Get jumping.
Tonight, the MAC football season gets underway. Ohio and Central Michigan at 7 Eastern on ESPN. Buffalo and Northern Illinois on ESPN2. Tom has the call on that game. And at 8 on ESPNU, Bowling Green and Toledo. It's MAC Wednesday, also streaming live on the ESPN app. But let's talk a little bit about the top of the rankings, Todd. And let me ask you this. Cincinnati on the outside looking in at number 6. But give me a reason outside the quarterback who's playing well that the Bearcats are ranked so high.
Luke Fickell's defense. this is a fun group to watch. And, you know, the whole defensive line is really good. I'm talking, you know, top tier type of good. There's some other holes and issues on the other side of the ball. But to me, Myjai Sanders, just starting to watch tape last week against Memphis, he took off. And you can see with the get-off quickness that he has, that first step of explosiveness, then when he gets his hands inside and how quick he's able to move around and get the edge, and then finally finish it, too, with speed. He has 8.5 tackles for loss, 5 sacks this year, and I can't wait to see what he does this week against Houston. This is a defense that's playing with a lot of confidence, and I hope after ABC 330, yes, I'm promoting, but I hope there's people start to realize how good of a job that Luke Fickell has done here.
You're allowed to promote. Promote away. Luke, let me ask you about Georgia and Florida again, because Georgia ranked one spot ahead of Cincy in that number five spot. What's a deciding factor in that game?
Quarterback position. There's just such a wide gap between Kyle Trask and whether it's Stetson Bennett or whoever it is that Georgia tries to come up with an answer to improve under center. I just don't think with a lack of productive, to put it kindly, passing game. We know Georgia can run the football. We know they're physical. But if they get themselves in a position where they've got to throw or they've got to make big plays or they get behind the chains and they've got to make plays at quarterback, there's just such a discrepancy between Kyle Trask and Stetson Bennett that I think it puts a ton of pressure on Georgia's offense.
Yeah, and I think you've said it. Behind the chains. Like, I think they need to take some more risks early on. I think they have to open things up. And it's kind of counterintuitive, easy for me to say, because of how he's played. Yeah. But I think that part of the problem is they're so conservative. I think Stetson Bennett needs an opportunity. If he's going to be the starter, let him go out and let it rip.
All right, he gets the opportunity this weekend. Again, the Pac-12 will kick off play on Saturday morning. And also of note, Kyle Whittingham at Utah signs a 4-year extension. See you tomorrow, everybody.